Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we are back. I'm sure you know that today's Ash Wednesday, the beginning of Lent, a day of fast and abstinence. It is not, by the way, a holy day of obligation. You're not obligated to go to Mass today, but you're encouraged to do so. And if you do go to Mass, you will be receiving the ashes on your forehead as a reminder of what God said in Genesis chapter 3 to Adam and Eve, "Remember, man, that thou art dust, and to dust thou shalt return." So Adam and Eve, they started the ball rolling with their original sin. God's plan was not intended originally, and we were not meant originally to be sick and die, but that's one of the wages of sin, as the Bible says. The wages of sin is death. And so when you receive ashes on Ash Wednesday, it's not a morose reminder of death. It's rather a reminder of Christ's victory over death and how, even though, yes, in due time we will all die, nonetheless, if you love Jesus and if you are staying close to him and you're seeking to do his will, as Jesus said, you're loving God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and you love your neighbor as yourself, thereby you are fulfilling the law and you're going to go to heaven. You'll be happy with the Lord forever in heaven. So that's what it's all about. That's why we do this, is to remind ourselves of the victory that Jesus won. That's why we use holy water. In fact, if you signed up for Father Rocky's Lenten Lessons, you got your holy water episode today in your email box, the first day of Lent, today, Ash Wednesday, in which Father Rocky, in a two-minute video, gave the first of his, what will be, 40 explanations of different parts of the Mass that even many Catholics who have been Catholic their whole lives are not necessarily familiar with. So that's something that you would have seen this morning. And if you didn't see it, that's because you didn't sign up. So just go to relevantradio.com/Lent. Tell us what email address you'd like it sent to. It's not too late. You can get started today and have a wonderful, even better Lent than ever before by dialing in even more into the love of Jesus and the way he expresses that love for you in the Mass. So check it out. It's all free. No obligation. No salesman will call. Just go to relevantradio.com/Lent. Now, I'm going to go back to the phone calls here in just a moment, but as I promised I would, I received a very thoughtful email from a lady named, what was her name again, Cyrus? I forgot her name. Veronica. And at the beginning of her email, she says, she said a lot of nice things about the show, but she says, "I'm struggling to understand your sentiment against Russia and the demonization of Putin and all his actions. I am by no means romanticizing or praising Putin's actions," she says. "I condemn violence. However, with all respect, I can sense that you," referring to me, "have been absorbed by the official narrative, and I see a lack of objectivity toward this matter." So then she says, "Have you considered the following?" And then she gives me a list of like 36 bullet points. You know, why did NATO deny Russia the adhesion to their allegiance years ago? Well, the reason is because NATO was established to counteract Russia. So there would be no point in inviting Russia to join NATO. And she has a series of sort of geopolitical questions. And I went through maybe the first dozen or so, a few other quick ones because I promised I'd mention them. Why is the mainstream media now orienting the public discourse on racism and the dichotomy between democracy and autocracy? Well, I suppose, Veronica, one reason is, even though I don't throw the mainstream media, I don't trust the mainstream media as far as I can throw them in many matters. But I think the simple answer is because the United States is a kind of democracy. It's not a pure democracy. We're a republic. But this country is founded on democratic principles, for better or for worse. Democracies are not perfect by any means. But I would think, to answer your question, the reason the mainstream media is focused on this dichotomy between the autocracy that is Russia with the ruler, the dictator, for all intents and purposes, who is Putin, and a democratically elected government in Ukraine, is because we're a democratically elected government and because we purport to defend democracy. I don't think this is a... I'm not even sure why you're asking me this question, because the answer seems self-evident. Why is the United States so interested in playing up the distinction between a democracy and an autocracy? Well, because we think institutionally that democracies are better. Isn't it scary, the narrative they're using now? I'm afraid they will soon replace the status of unvaccinated to anti-democrat if one dares to challenge the New World Order. Yeah, they probably will, but okay. This feels like the second French Revolution. I'm afraid millions of people will enter the game without knowing the rules the globalists have planned for this New World Order. See, here's part of the problem, and I understand the points you're making. I would respectfully, however, submit to you, Veronica, that I seek to be objective. Now, only God knows to what extent I actually am, or you are, or anyone else for that matter, but I seek to be objective. And in my objectivity, may I say to you, I don't accept the mainstream, well, let me put it this way. I don't accept at face value what seems to be shaping up politically and quasi-religiously on the left and the right. I don't accept the narratives that we should, on the one hand, and this is increasingly common, I'm finding, among my conservative friends. I consider myself a conservative, okay? All cards on the table. I'm not a fan of the Republican Party. I'm not a fan, okay? And I've unplugged from the Republican Party, only to find out later that if you vote in a primary election and you happen to vote for a Republican candidate, you automatically get put back into the Republican Party. So I've gone round and round with, the voter department in the state of Ohio. But anyway, that's beside the point. I'm just putting my cards on the table. I want you to know where I'm coming from. I'm anti-abortion. I am pro-traditional marriage. I would like to see smaller government. I believe in the Constitution. So I think by most ways of reckoning it, I would fall into the category of somebody who's conservative. But at the same time, I think we should do more to help refugees. I think we should do more to help people who are disadvantaged. So whether it's unwed mothers, the crime problem, incarceration issues, poverty, all of the above. I don't consider myself to be a conservative who doesn't care about any of those things. I care very much about those things. And I think that we can do a lot better than we've been doing before. But all of those aside, and the reason I'm telling you this is so that you have a sense of where I'm coming from, because I'm not trying to be coy with you. I'm not trying to dance around issues. I want you to know where I'm coming from. But at the same time, I'm seeing among many of my conservative friends this sort of paranoia, this true conspiracy theory paranoia, that this is what George Soros and the globalists want you to think. They want you to hate Vladimir Putin, and they want you to hate Russia because they're trying to do this and they're trying to do that. And then on the left side of the thing, there's the analog to that, which is, you know, you have to stand up and defend Ukraine no matter what, because, and I don't even want to parse this out. Rather, here's where I'm coming from. You want to know where I'm coming from? This is it. Regardless of who's at fault for what and how things have gotten to this point, and what role did the CIA play, and does George Soros fund this, and all of the above, whatever. Whatever those things are that may be true, here we are, right now, today, where Ukraine is being raped by Russia. Not very effectively, by the way. Because Ukraine is kicking some you-know-what, apparently, if the media reports are accurate. And again, I leave room for the fact that this could all be theater and maybe on a vast scale. There's a massive amount of information being fed to us. That's possible. I don't discount it. But assuming that that's not the case, Ukraine is kicking some serious you-know-what, and everybody expected that Russia was just going to waltz in and take over with nary a shot being fired, and that's not what's happening. Russia's getting its head handed to it. Now, is that going to change in the near future? Possibly. Maybe things are going to turn. Maybe it's going to get really ugly. Maybe Putin will use tactical nukes. Who knows what will happen? I don't know what will happen. I got up this morning, as I did the last couple of mornings, prayerfully pondering the possibility that if this is not handled properly, in a godly way, if you ask me, then, and I know it sounds insane for me to say this, Cyrus, tell me this sounds insane when I say this, okay? If this is not handled properly and we wind up in a war with Russia, I mean a real war with Russia, you and everyone you know could be dead very soon.
That's crazy. It doesn't sound crazy. It doesn't.
I know. I know it doesn't.
I wish it did.
I know. But I'm not sure people understand that. And I'm not saying people are dumb. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying I don't know if that reality is sinking in yet for people to realize what this would mean if we got into a head-to-head war with Russia. So reality check, Cyrus. Am I going off the edge? I don't think so.
No, I think you're a voice of reason, and I'm watching the news and flipping through the channels, and it's all madness. Mm-hmm. And I listen. I'm fortunate enough to work with you, and you sound like a voice of reason.
Well, thank you. I hope we're not voices crying in the wilderness and nobody's listening. Let us pray. If you've ever prayed for peace before, pray for peace now, because if this thing gets out of control, it could get really, really bad. And we talked about Fatima, and we talked about Akita, and some of the things that Our Lady has said about future events. And this could be that, and I don't want it to be, quite frankly. I hope and pray that we can avoid that. Let's go to Nick in Rio Rancho, New Mexico. Rick, thanks for your patience. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. So I really appreciate the clear perspectives on this, because, proceeding with caution with so many variables to consider, like to use kind of an illustration, if there's a suicide bomber in front of you, are you just going to charge him, or are you going to figure out, okay, you know, what's going on? What's the situation? Is he trigger happy? Is he, you know, with Putin in all likelihood, right, he probably is a trigger happy madman. But
and if you rushed him and tackled him, is it possible that the 50 people standing around him would all be killed as well if you did that?
Right. Yeah, that's actually, that's a good point too. Yeah, and zeroing in, I think, on Putin, praying for him and trying to get a read on him, because even the people around him are saying that he's acting strange and different. Mm-hmm. So there's just so many things to that are just kind of like, we don't know. We just don't know.
Mm-hmm. You're right. So if you were El Presidente and you're faced with a situation in Iraq, I mean, just knowing what you know, obviously we don't know all of it. Do you say, yes, we're going to war with Russia, or do you say, let's try some other things first? Which direction would you go in?
I would definitely lean in the direction of caution. To use a quote from Chesterton, the only defensible war is a war of defense. You know, not saying that we would wait for Russia to strike us specifically, but, you know, maybe we should consider, okay, is he bringing in, you know, deadly weapons that are indiscriminate and are violating, you know, certain like, you know, human rights? And what exactly is he doing? What is he up to? So that's kind of where I lean.
Right. Okay, well, I'm with you on that, Nick. I appreciate it. You know, long, long ago, probably, I don't know, 25, 30 years ago, I spoke at St. Thomas Aquinas Parish in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, and I've never forgotten it.
He's really impressed.
Nick, thank you. Give my regards to St. Thomas Aquinas Parish, please. Let's go now to Larry. Where did Larry go? There he is. Larry in New York.
Right here.
Okay, welcome.
Yes, hi, how you doing? Okay, I'm going to be short. My son is in touch with one of his friends is in the U.S. Army. His friend told him that, you know, what Russia is doing might be called for, well, I don't know if that's the right thing, interpretation, but he said, the friend told my son that the Ukraine is doing child sex trafficking.
Okay. A whole bunch of people in Mexico are doing child sex trafficking as well. Should we attack Mexico?
Oh, right. You got a point there, yes. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not dismissing it. I mean, it's a heinous crime that cries to heaven for vengeance, no doubt. But, you know, I can acknowledge the fact, I mean, I don't know to what extent it's true, but let's say it's worse than we even know in Ukraine. If that's the case, is this the right solution? And I would say no. It's not the right solution for Vladimir Putin to invade Ukraine because there's sex trafficking. There are other solutions, but that's not the right solution. That's my view.
Right.
What do you think?
But I personally believe he's there for the oil.
Maybe so. Some people, the biblical prophecy people, are right now jumping up and down and saying that he's there because he wants to sort of set the stage for an eventual invasion of Israel. So there are a lot of people who are attributing various motives to Putin, that being one of
them. Right. Okay.
Anyway. Well, thank you, Larry. I appreciate your calm and insightful comments. Thank you for that. Let's go now to Mark in Eureka, California. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Patrick, and hello, Cyrus. Thanks for trying to cover all this.
Sure.
And I acknowledge you do it as objectively as is possible. You've had some great calls, and the media has not been our friend. Security is information, and we seem to be guessing. And given that, I wondered what your input was as far as Putin's mindset, what his motivations are. As your last caller, yeah, I heard a while ago that Russia wants Ukraine's wheat. And so we don't really know. You had a great caller about the history. You and he discussed the history of NATO. Uh-huh. Also, if Putin's mindset, whatever it is, do you have any opinion on the Ezekiel war?
Ezekiel 38? Gog and Magog. Well, I mean, I alluded to it briefly a minute ago, but yeah, to the extent that prophecy in Ezekiel involves Russia, I mean, the biblical names, Tubal-Cain, Rosh, Gog, Magog, and the various other ancient biblical names for countries, the question, it seems, is do these correspond to modern nation states like Russia and Turkey and et cetera? I don't know. I'm inclined to think they probably do, but that would focus on whether or not we're living in the end times, because it seems to me that those prophecies tie into the end times and that sort of final effort to encircle and destroy Israel. And then there's another question: is modern day Israel, the nation state of Israel, is that the Israel that's being talked about in these prophetic books? And I don't think that's an established fact one way or the other as well. And I don't claim to be an expert in prophecy, but is it possible that maybe there is a divine revelation aspect to all this? Yes, that's certainly possible. And, you know, because hindsight is 20/20, we could look back in a few years and say, oh, well, that all makes sense now. But in the moment, it's hard to tell for sure. So I leave that open as a possibility, but I don't know, honestly, whether or not that's really what's happening here or not. What are your thoughts?
Well, yeah, it's just my biblical knowledge is very limited. But going back to the secular, for instance, President Trump was criticized highly for saying anything that might be positive about Putin, and I'm not connected to the media much. Has anyone picked his brain about what his administration be asked? Like, what is Putin, you know, where is he going to stop? Or,
yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm not looking
in the dark.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay,
hard to say.
You.
Yeah, thank you, Mark. Appreciate your phone call, and we're going to do more of your phone calls right after this. So please stay right there. This song is interesting in light of current events, isn't it? I'll be right back.
Violator,
We're back. Thanks for listening. My number is 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Got a note here from Bill Moody, a charter member of Team Taco. He says on Twitter, I found the absolute objective truth about the situation, Patrick. And he sent me a video to a guy who purports to say what's really going on with Russia. I watched this video. Thank you, Bill. I watched that video, I don't know, 2-3 days ago, whenever it was first posted. And I think he makes some sense in some areas, but his thesis essentially is that Russia is doing this on purpose. They're not really getting trounced by Ukraine, that they're getting right up to the edge and they're seeing what kind of resistance they're going to get from the Ukrainians. And then they pull back and they wait and then they encircle. And his thesis is they do this because they want to take not only the Ukrainian army, but also Ukraine as a country with all of its buildings and infrastructure, et cetera. His theory is that this is part of their magic. This is their secret sauce, although he doesn't use those terms. And what Russia really wants to do is capture it intact. I don't think so. And when I first watched
this— Is he saying it's like a frog in a boiling water scenario? Is
that— Well, yeah. Yeah, yeah. So thank you, Bill. I appreciate it. And I did watch that video a couple days ago, but I don't buy into his theory. And I don't think his theory is panning out. The more the destruction mounts in Ukraine. Now, and I'm not talking just about the destruction of Ukraine. There's plenty of that. But what about this rampant destruction of Russian military equipment? Their helicopters and planes being shot out of the sky. Tanks now numbering into the hundreds that have been destroyed by Ukrainian resistance. These are Russian battle tanks. I thought Russia was a nuclear, well, they are nuclear, but I thought Russia was a military superpower. I think most people assumed that Russia would just come in and be so overwhelmingly superior that it would be no contest, and it's not working out that way by a long shot. So if this gentleman's theory is correct, and maybe, Bill, you yourself don't buy into it. I don't know. But I don't buy into it. Because current events demonstrate that if that's Russia's, you know, secret trick that they're trying to do, it's not working out very well for them. And how many thousands of Russian troops are now dead? It's just a big mess, that's for sure. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Gina in Minot, North Dakota. Hi, Gina.
Hi. Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
I'm living here in Minot, North Dakota, which has a military base 13 miles out of the city. And Minot Air Force Base has 150 missile sites surrounding the city of Minot in various wheat fields and that kind of stuff. And we also have B-52 bombers. Mm-hmm. And I lived for 20 years with a husband that worked on those missiles. And I don't think people realize that just a tiny spark of Russia said this, we said that, back and forth, can spark those missiles to go off because he sends his, we'll send ours. And like one missile can have up to 10 warheads on it.
Yeah.
And you bomb 10 places and you kiss the world goodbye.
Right.
I mean,
the acronym from the time of the Cold War, from the time of, let's say, post-World War II, certainly by the time of the 50s. The acronym, I'm sure you're familiar with it, is MAD, Mutual Assured Destruction. And that has been, I guess, maybe the most simplified way of expressing the doctrine, the military doctrine of a nuclear deterrent between the United States and Russia. And that is, if you nuke us, we nuke you, everybody dies. And there'll be no Russia left. And there'll be no United States left. And that mutual assured destruction is what we're dealing with here. We're not even talking for the moment about China, but you can imagine that they're very, very intent upon what's going on. And for all I know, maybe they're in cahoots with Putin. It's entirely possible. But one wrong move and everybody could be suddenly in the upper atmosphere because it can happen that fast.
Yeah, I know here, because I said we lived with it, I'm very conscious of just the slightest spark from either side can trigger the world goodbye. I mean, it's scary. Yeah. And I'm all for, Ukraine. I mean, one of the towns in Ukraine is spelled like my maiden name. So, I have a feeling for them, but I don't want the whole world to go.
No.
We got to be very careful for what we say. And in the same breath, we're killing unborn babies. So, I don't.
You know, there are people, I have to press on, Gina. Thank you for that. And I'm glad you raised that question. There are people, and I get texts and comments from them, and these are friends, these are good people, who are nursing this theory that we, the United States, actually provoked Putin to do what he's doing in Ukraine because of our gay pride parades and because of all the reprehensible things that are going on in this country, that somehow we, the United States, morally, as bankrupt as we are morally, that somehow we are to blame for Putin doing what he's doing. It's a very twisted and, I would argue, a deeply misguided way of looking at what's going on here. But that's another theory that is making the rounds. Thank you, Gene. Appreciate it. How about Kevin now in Los Angeles? Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Patrick. Thank you for your show.
Sure.
I agree with you on nearly all points, but with respect to this conflict, as with everyone, I pray for a peaceful resolution soon. But I think it's a lot more nuanced than you suggest. I mean, the mainstream media here, it's Russia bad, Ukraine good. Putin's a dictator. Ukraine's a democracy. But from the Russian side, I mean, they will say that Zelensky was put in as leader following a military coup overthrowing a democratic election. Mm-hmm. I don't know all the details of that, but I do know that I don't know how much more Ukraine is a democracy than Russia is. Having said that, and as an international relations major, graduated in 1989, mm-hmm. at that time the Cold War was very much part of our studies. And in my experience, contrary to the propaganda that we get sometimes, most state actors are rational actors, meaning that they act in their perceived self-interest of their country.
Right.
And I don't have any reason to not believe that Putin is doing so. I also vividly recall that in the aftermath of the fall of the Soviet Union, we gave them assurances that we would not move NATO to their borders.
Mm-hmm.
And here we are, fast forward 20 years, trying to get Ukraine into NATO. That would be akin to China getting into a military alliance with Mexico or Canada.
Right. And just to interject for a moment, Kevin, that's a point that I have made many times. In fact, I made it earlier on the show today, that would be an intolerable situation if China were to set up a military presence just south of our border in Mexico. So I totally get what you're saying. And I agree with you that there are incredible nuances here to be taken into account. But if I can leapfrog over all of those things that you and I agree upon, how we got here is a big mess. But here we are. And now we have the spectacle of Russia having invaded Ukraine and people are dying and the country is being destroyed. That problem isn't, we can't, I don't think anyway, and I'd like to know what you think. I don't think, in fact, I know that I couldn't say, well, that's okay because of everything that led up to it. It's now okay that Putin is doing what he's doing in Ukraine because of all the freaky stuff the CIA did and, the terrible things that went on. All of those being what they are, they led up to this. But now we've got this problem, and it's not moral, in my view, for us to say, oh, well, then we should just let it happen because of all the things that led up to it. In a way, Kevin, and I know you're not saying this, okay? I'm not. But in a way, it occurs to me that it's almost like saying, well, she had it, she deserved to be raped because of how she was dressed, in the way she was acting and how she was dressed. So she got raped. Maybe she deserved it. Of course, that's a reprehensible way of looking at something. But I kind of get the feeling that some people in the media are looking at this that way, and making they're condoning, or at least they are acquiescing to what Putin has done in Ukraine because of their perceived list of grievances against Ukraine and the CIA, that kind of thing. And I think we have to reject that way of thinking personally. We don't blame the rape victim for her rape because of how she was dressed. Do you see the point I'm making? Do you see the connection?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And as a prosecutor, that issue would be very close to my line of work. I also note that, you know, people tend to use the term conspiracy theory to discount plausible, reasonable alternative explanations for what we are fed here. And a conspiracy is only an agreement by two or more people for some nefarious purpose. And conspiracies are proven in court every day. I'll also say, historically, if you look back at how the United States got into World War II, there's a lot of material that has come out since then that we knew that Japan was poised to hit Pearl Harbor. And when you look back at history and then you look at current events, a lot of times there's a lot more going on than what we know. And I don't profess to know everything, but obviously, no, I do not condone Russia going in Ukraine. This is a failure of diplomacy. And, you know, frankly, I attribute it to our leadership. Our leadership right now is pretty weak. And Russia, Putin is the type to seize on that weakness and take advantage of it. And, you know, it's a failure by our leadership as well, because as a, you know, world power, we should have done more to circumvent this result. But here we are now.
Right. I agree with you. You know, not to mention the fact that it seems painfully evident that that Joe Biden is not fully there, and that I don't know whether he's suffering from Alzheimer's or what, but he's not fully there, and he has a really hard time at times, you know, getting through a sentence. So I think all the more reason that if Putin were as wily as he certainly appears to be, it makes sense that he would choose a time when the president of the United States seems to be, in a certain sense, incapacitated, because then he would have an easier time to do what he's doing. And I think China's closely watching and Iran is closely watching, and we'll see what happens. But I think you and I are on the same page, it sounds like.
One other final point is, you know, people, there's a lot of talk about, you know, election integrity, and regardless of how you fall politically, it's obvious looking back at our last election that there were some major issues with the election, and we need to fix that. If we're going to be a republic that is democratic and elections count, then we've got to fix what we do before we start, you know, criticizing everybody else for how they run their countries, because this is the result. We have a messy election, and we get a president that apparently is not completely there. And it's a very dangerous situation.
Indeed. Indeed it is, Kevin. I couldn't have said it better, which is all the more reason why we need to be praying that rosary every day. Pray your rosary every day. Our Lady said, pray the rosary every day. Pray for peace. If you've ever in your life prayed for peace, pray now. We need it now. I'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
In and around all of the attention that's being rightfully paid to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, this is the story of the day, that's for sure. In the background, though, another story is unfolding that you probably haven't heard about. You certainly haven't heard about it on CNN or MSNBC. And that is that a national vaccine pass is being rolled out quietly. Forbes has an article on this. While the United States government has not issued a federal digital vaccine pass, a national standard has nevertheless emerged. 21 states so far, as well as the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, offer accessibility to the Smart Health Card, a verifiable digital proof of vaccination developed through the Vaccination Credential Initiative, VCI, a global coalition of public and private stakeholders, including Microsoft, Salesforce, Oracle, and the Mayo Clinic, as well as other tech and health heavyweights. Very soon, at least four more states will be rolling out access to smart health cards. We've seen a noticeable uptick in states that have officially launched public portals where individuals can get verifiable vaccination credentials in the form of smart health cards with a QR code. That's according to Dr. Brian Anderson, co-founder of the VCI and chief digital health physician at a company called MITRE. Now, there's no time for me to read this to you in any length, but I do encourage you to look at this because, you know, what's the old saying from the movie? Pay no attention to the man behind the curtain. Do not underestimate the ability of the media to keep you and me so absorbed by what's going on 6,000, 7,000 miles away in Ukraine with Russia. That's a big story, no doubt about it. We're going to keep talking about it. But in the background, other things are happening, and this is one of them. So I don't know how you feel about the possibility of your having to have a mandatory vaccine digital passport, something I've talked about for over 2 years on this program. Can I get an amen, Cyrus? I've talked about this.
Hey, what happened?
I've talked about this till Cyrus has been bleeding from the ears.
A man and a woman.
That's right. So it's, I mean, I'm not saying, hey, I told you so, but it's happening. It's happening. So read this article. It's from Forbes, not a right-wing publication. And this is steadily moving into position where, if you ask me, it won't be much longer before it will become mandatory.
You do not know what you are talking about.
I think I do, Dr. Fauci. And I know, if you disobey the rules, you get cut off. I know. And I don't mess with me about words like this. But
ain't nothing gonna happen.
We'll see. So anyway, that's happening in the background. Cyrus, where would people find that article if they wanted to read it?
If you go, sorry, I'm amusing myself.
I know.
If you go to relevantradio.com/Patrick, it'll be right there. You can't miss it.
Okay, good. Thank you. Katie in Boston, good morning and welcome.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
For taking my call, I appreciate it. Sure. And what you just mentioned makes me so nauseous because I believe that, you know, our rights continue to diminish, but also it starts to make me buy into some of these globalist conspiracy type things that I'm hearing more and more about because it's really scary. But that aside, I was calling about more to do with the Ukraine piece that you've been discussing. Mm-hmm. And I think you've had some wonderful discussions and callers, and it just, you know, provides more light on the complexity and the weightiness of the, mm-hmm. you know, issues involved here. What I wanted to get your opinion on is, you know, when we look at how this, not the history, but if you look at the here and now, which you keep bringing us all back to, the here and now was, you know, originally started with Russia requesting that Ukraine maintain neutrality. And that didn't happen. I think that maybe if that had happened in the beginning when diplomacy was underway, maybe not, that could have helped avoid some of this. But it didn't happen. Now it is being requested. Ukraine is saying they were open to it. Supposedly more talks may or may not be taking place. In the meantime, Russia continues to be, as you stated, and I think, you know, morally repugnant in terms of how they're kind of pursuing this. And we have globally, you know, responded through sanctions. And I think that, you know, yes, I understand how we've gone about it with the sanctions. I think at this point, and this is my thought, and again, this is really where I wanted to get back to you on the point of what do we do now? And when it comes to what can we do more, sure, we can send munitions and all of that and support in that way. But aside from boots on the ground, I don't agree with that. Further sanctions is what I think. Will it help? I'm not sure. But the oil bit is the piece that really kind of sticks to me as an area that we should consider. And I know that our administration is not, based upon last.
You're talking about Russian oil or?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Actually, let me clarify. So when we think about what can we do now regarding Russia, further sanctions with regarding Russia oil is what I'm thinking. And at this point, what I'm understanding is that we're going to continue to purchase Russian oil. And my thoughts are, and this is where I want to get your thoughts, is the fact that we have become so energy dependent And in fact, even in a situation like this, we'll continue that dependency seems illogical to me. And I had hoped that with
the biggest client for Russian oil is? Can you take a guess?
Who?
China. China purchases annually in excess of 30% of Russian oil right now. So one of the things to consider, Katie, and I understand where you're going with this, you know, let's hurt them in the pocketbook. Mm-hmm. Okay, fair enough. But they'll still sell that oil. And if China becomes an even bigger stakeholder in Russian oil, it also redounds to the benefit of China and further strengthens their military, et cetera.
Right.
So there's some weird counterbalancing acts that we have to do when we evaluate this, don't you think?
Yeah, no, that's why I want you to throw this out there, because I do know that that is the other component of the puzzle, because that's where Russia is kind of building up their trade with China to begin with before all this took place. So that component, yeah, that makes sense. So then maybe that isn't the solution, but it might not hurt if that started happening. But I understand it could push them more together as partners, but it is complicated. So anyway,
if you ask me, I would say we should become energy independent, and we could if we only were allowed to. But we've got the screamers on the left who won't permit us to use our own energy and drill for oil and such. And it's foolhardy. And God forbid that we have to pay the price for that in the long run. But I hear what you're saying, Katie. I'm glad you threw that out there. That is an interesting angle for sure. Thank you. Let's go to Connie now in Murrieta, California. Hi, Connie.
Hi. I've been listening for the last hour or so, and what I have to say, I haven't heard anybody else say, but I'm going to go ahead and say it anyway.
Okay.
First of all, I believe everything that you believe, but I did vote Republican in 2016. Having said that, I am noticing as I'm exploring this situation with Ukraine and things, that I'm seeing old pictures of people who have been hurt, and, you know, they look horrible off from 2005 and 2017, and they're showing them now in regards to what's going on in Ukraine. Another thing is, I haven't seen any of the people with automatic rifles. And also, I noticed that these explosions, these huge explosions that are in front of these huge buildings, there's nothing but smoke. And so you don't really, I haven't seen the buildings after the smoke recedes. It just shows what I think are just staged explosions.
I've seen some, to your point, Connie, I've seen quite a few pictures. These are some video and also still pictures. And mostly it's coming from the European press, including some of the tabloids in England, for example. But it does show devastation. There's no doubt about it. But let me add a little fuel to your fire here. Here's my question.
Mm-hmm.
Where are the dead bodies? We see these long bombed out convoys of Russian tanks that have been destroyed, as far as we're being told. I believe it. The proof is there, it seems. Where are all the bodies? Now, somebody said, you know, well, they have those mobile crematoria where they can just roll up in a truck and put in the bodies and incinerate them on the spot. That's true. But we're talking about many thousands of people. You know, maybe by now 10,000 or more dead Russian troops. Why aren't we seeing any pictures of that? Where are they? And I'm not suggesting that, you know, that this is all smoke and mirrors, but it sure is strange to me if you ask me, why aren't in these pictures of devastation, where are the bodies? And that's a question I haven't gotten an answer to yet. I don't know if you have.
Yeah, well, just my own personal opinion. I think that we're all being misled. Not only by the fake news, but it's now the narrative of, you know, OAN and Newsmax and stuff like that. I think it's all happening for a very good reason, but I do not think that
what's the very good reason?
Well, the good reason is that this may be the way the Lord is going to bring a peace on earth and bring in the new world. I have noticed also over this past year and a half, and I've never been involved in government, never cared one way or the other about it. But having the COVID come in, I know I spent more time now seeing what's going on around the world, not only in the United States. And I noticed that, you know, Myanmar and Venezuela and several other ones, at least two or three other ones, they've kind of taken a coup over these horrible, horrible governments. And I think that the people in Ukraine are fantastic people, but I do think that their evil government also has a swamp.
Maybe. Connie, I've got to press on. Thank you for your thoughts. I appreciate it very much. I just wish we had more time. How about Eric now in Minneapolis? Hi, Eric.
Hey, how's it going? I just have a question about the communication that's going on in the world.
Okay. Okay.
I'm no theologian. I'm no historian or anything, but I was just thinking of the example the other day of, let's say, back in previous wars before technology, if a sergeant, you know, or whoever's running the military is making the decisions, and a war, part of his military about 100 miles away gets into a battle, like, how is he going to know? Well, he's going to know based on the message that he receives. But I don't know, if there's somebody on the other end of the war that knows that somebody's going to go tell the general the message, they're going to do everything possible to intercept that message.
Are you talking about like a coup against Putin on the part of some military units?
Yeah, I'm just wondering, like, with the media we have right now and how everything is in our face and a click away from hearing anything, like, how much of that messaging that we're getting is even accurate, and should we even listen to anything?
It's a valid question you're asking, Eric. I don't pretend to have the exact answer to that question. But I do believe in the Reagan doctrine of trust but verify. So maybe not even trust at this point. My default position is not to trust much of what we see in the mainstream media, but I am willing to accept the facts as they are. I just would like to see them established as facts so that there's proof to know that what we're being told is true. Because so often what we're being told is not true. But that's a very good point, Eric. Thank you for that. Let's see. I think we have time to get to Eugene in Chicago. Hi, Eugene.
Hi, good morning, Patrick. I just have a quick question. I mean, a quick statement. I cannot demand that people learn Ukrainian history. I cannot demand that people learn about the Holodomor. Mm-hmm. Etc. But I just wonder, how can people believe that basically the talk radio philosophy of Putin allegedly standing for moral issues on face of what he's doing? How can anybody think that a person that is doing what he's doing right now is not using allegedly being against gay marriage, allegedly being against all this immorality that is committed here and all over the world, as nothing but an excuse to really gather around him naive people to support him? Because you have to be naive to believe that he's a moral person.
I think you raised a very important question, Eugene. I will say this much, what he's doing in Ukraine is immoral, absolutely immoral, and it should be opposed. How best to oppose it, though? That's the tricky question. Thank you. And my thanks to all of you who have participated in the show today. I'll be with you again tomorrow. Same Pat time, same Pat channel. I'll pray for you. Please pray for me.